Here's a question for every woman who's ever loved science but didn't pursue it as a career. Why? Eileen Pollack has wrestled with that question for most of her life, and she tried to find the answer in her new book, The Only Woman in the Room: Why Science is Still a Boys' Club. And for Pollack, it's an especially powerful question because she's a pioneer. In 1978, she was one of the first two women to earn a physics degree from Yale. Not only that, she graduated at the top of her class, and that's where her scientific career stopped. No grad school, no groundbreaking research. So when I talked to Eileen Pollack, I asked her how she felt about that.
Well, you know, I always felt that because I didn't go on to grad school, that in fact I had fulfilled the prophecy of my high school principal who wouldn't let me take the advanced science and math courses because, as he said, girls never go on in science and math. So I was ashamed, and I didn't feel as if I were a scientist. I felt as if I had let down the whole female gender by not going on to grad school, rather than saying, look what I did, even though I came into Yale so unprepared because they wouldn't let me take these courses, and look how well I did by the end. I just felt like a miserable
summa
failure.
Summa cum laude. I mean, you were at the top of your class.
But this is what women do. Okay, so this isn't just me. And of course, it's not all women. But there are studies that show that women are just much harder on themselves than men in general, and that women focus on what they didn't do or the one problem they got wrong, or that it was an A minus, not an A, and that makes them a failure, right?
Well, I would like to talk specifically about the kinds of things that you experienced while you were, I mean, we could focus on what happened before you even got to college, of course, but while you were at Yale, because you kind of go back and do, you know, what you call an autopsy,
right,
of what was then your nascent scientific career. I mean, can you give us one or two examples of what it was like being a female physics student then in you know, the mid-1970s?
Well, for one thing, I was just incredibly self-conscious. And, you know, that title, The Only Woman in the Room, it's really if you're the only anything in the room. You often just are so distracted by that, by the sense that you represent an entire gender or race or, you know, nationality, that it's very hard to actually just focus on the work. So that was going on. And, of course, I had come in so far behind. I felt far behind even when I was no longer behind. And it's hard for people to imagine just how isolated I was, but I had virtually no contact. Even though I took all my courses with the same 12 guys for 4 years, I couldn't name you more than one or two of those guys, and they don't remember me as even having been in the class. You know, they all did their problem sets together. They
yeah.
hung out together, and I was completely isolated. Nobody really talked to me. And that was, I didn't realize at the time how incredibly difficult that was.
Well, and what about support from faculty?
Most of my physics and math professors were actually great guys. I mean, they were superb teachers. They liked me. I liked them. They were not villains, right? They just didn't get how isolated I felt, how much encouragement I needed. They just didn't understand. I didn't even really understand how much I needed that.
Right.
They really couldn't.
So this
give.
Encouragement question,
right.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that in a second, but there was something which you revealed that just kind of blew my mind, that in the process of writing this book, you went back and talked to people who were connected with the thesis that you wrote?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, do you remember what your thesis
yes.
was? What was it about?
Well, it was about why waves travel in one way in even dimensions and a completely different way in odd dimensions, such that if we lived in an even dimensional world, we would just be, it wouldn't work. We would just be inundated continually. Nothing would ever pass by you. You would always be in the middle of the sound or the light or whatever, and it just wouldn't work. And, you know, that's so cool. What is it? You know, I remember sitting there and trying to think what it even meant to, like, what's an 11-dimensional space? What's traveling through this, you know?
So I love how much detail you remember what your thesis was about, because you went back and talked to faculty members who had read your thesis in the 70s, and they told you something today that they never told you when you actually submitted
right.
it, which was?
That it was remarkable. I thought because it took me so long to even understand what the problem was, let alone teach myself all the very complicated math that I had never had to solve the problem, that I must be terrible at it, at math and science. It's one reason I didn't go on. And all these years later, I met with my advisor and I said, well, compared to all the other undergrads who did theses in math, in theoretical physics, how did mine compare? And he just said, oh, undergrads never do projects like this, what you did was extraordinary.
And you're just like, wait a minute.
I just...
40 years later?
I said I didn't know whether to strangle him or kiss him I started to cry, actually.
Of course. I teared up. I mean, this gets right to the heart of what you say was missing in the 70s when you were making some very important decisions about what you wanted your career to be.
But this hasn't changed.
So I was going to say, is it still missing now?
So it was a real discovery to me to find out that was still very true, that there was an actual ethos or philosophy in the sciences among most professors, and this included quite a few of the women I spoke to. We don't encourage anyone to go
male or female.
Male or female, because if you need encouragement, you don't deserve to be. You're not dedicated or motivated enough to succeed as a scientist.
So if that's true for male or female students, why does it seem to have an extraordinary impact on women?
These are great questions. And it's, first of all, the way women are still raised to need outside approval rather than to just be, you know, set your own value if you're a guy. But also, it's not equal. All things are not equal. First of all, the society is discouraging women and minorities because of course, all the images on popular media since the beginning of time have been of white men. And there's so many other ways that, you know, women are picking up these subtle messages. No one will date you if you're a scientist. You're not really good at this. So it's not equal. And then there have been studies that show that the professors who think they're treating everybody equally are, in fact, responding to emails from their white male students sooner in a more positive way, or they spend more time answering questions or asking them out for a beer or something. So it's not all equal. And so the idea that, A, that nobody should give encouragement, I think, is kind of nuts, but also that people think the playing field is equal and that they're not encouraging anyone and that the society somehow is treating everybody equal is also, to me, is not true.
Now, in fact, you went back to Yale in terms of researching this book and also talking to students today.
Right.
Young female science students. I mean, we have to have come quite a distance from what you experienced in the mid to late 70s. But as I hear you saying, it hasn't been far enough, even though there are more female faculty members. Are there more support systems in for students?
So some things have gotten better, but I was shocked at how little had really gotten better. So there may be two women in the room now or three or four, but each woman sort of, most of those women are still feeling what I felt inside. But what really shocked me was the students I talked to who told me how they were still being treated in junior high and high school and even in college. One friend said her daughter was told, "You're too pretty to be good in math," by her math teacher. And she was a really smart, good student. So, or three girls in a robotics club, and the advisor told the three girls, "Well, you can prepare the refreshments." You know, so that's still going on, or that all these brilliant, attractive, really cool, hip young women who were majoring in Yale when I did the research a couple of years ago crowded around me and said, "Will anyone date us? Will anyone marry us? None of the boys want to go out with us because we're majoring in physics." And I just was floored that was still what was going on.
Look, we still also, I mean, as you well know, we have this going on to a certain degree, even at the highest levels in the most, you know, vaunted labs. Was it just this year where Tim Hunt, the British Nobel Prize winner, said that, you know, women don't belong in the labs because they cry too much? I wanted to feel more hopeful.
Well, I can give you some hope.
So give me some hope.
Well, first of all, suddenly everybody's talking about this. I think women, even there are a lot of well-meaning men, realize this is something we need to work on. I would say with people of color even more so. But so much of this is unconscious bias and remnant attitudes by people who actually do mean well and are not trying to keep women and minorities out. And when you make people aware of these implicit biases, these unconscious biases, it's not that hard to overcome them. And that's really my hope, the reason I wrote the book, so that people would... Some of these sound like silly reasons, but once you know them and you think of them as silly, they lose some of their power.
Let's hope so. Eileen Pollack's new book is The Only Woman in the Room, Why Science is Still a Boys' Club. You can read an excerpt of the book at our website. And by the way, while you're there, let us know, do you think science is still a boys' club?